Turn to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1. And I believe, although I know it's debated, that the Apostle Paul wrote the Hebrew letter. It doesn't particularly matter who wrote it, if it was inspired by God, which it is. But nevertheless, I believe Paul writes these words in Hebrews 11 and 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I intend to speak, if the Lord is with us tonight, on the subject of faith, particularly what is faith, because I think that that will go a long way toward the rest of the weekend, explaining or adding to some of the other thoughts that I have on my mind. So faith is my intended subject, but most of you, when you read it or heard me read it or have read this before, sort of gloss over some of the words. And we read and we pick up on things that we like or that are familiar or that seem to be this is the big picture. This is the key word or phrase that we want to get out of this. And we say, well, that's great. Brother John's going to talk about faith, and we've heard this verse. This isn't new territory. I haven't reached back into an obscure part of Leviticus. I haven't gone to some verse that we don't talk about. This is familiar territory. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Subject is faith, right? Well, maybe he's going to talk about substance for a minute, right? I mean, that's another important word. Faith is substance. So how is faith substance? What does that mean? Wonderful. Let's talk about that word. Hope, right? Another great word. Wonderful word. Important word to God's people. A hope, right? What is a hope? Can go off on a tangent here and begin preaching about hope for hours and hours. I won't. We may get to it later in this weekend. I'll tell you this, that the word hope by itself, defined in Scripture, is not just a wish or want.
Right.
I hope Brother John doesn't preach for more than an hour and a half. I prefer it to be 45 minutes. You know, that's a desire of the heart, certainly, but a hope, scripturally speaking, is going to be an earnest expectation. We've got something that says we believe this will happen, and so a hope is, no, it hasn't happened yet, but we are fairly certain that it will. We're just waiting for it to actually occur, right? The sun will come out tomorrow. Famous refrain. You're going off in the musical world now, but it's late at night already. I got to keep you awake, right? Sun will come out tomorrow. Sing it in your head. Yeah, we hope so, right? Unless something else intervenes, we pass or the Lord comes back, we expect that the sun will come up. It's not just we wish it would, you know. I wish it would be a little cooler. I wish it wouldn't rain, right? But I hope the sun will come out. Okay. Important word. Evidence, right? Now, faith is, right? First, it's the substance of things hoped for. And that little comma kind of says, now faith is something else. It is the evidence of things not seen. It's two things here, okay? Did you miss the word now? Right, we do, don't we? Because we turn to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. It's the first verse of the 11th chapter. We're starting new and we're ready to get into what this talks about. And so that first word doesn't matter. It's a throwaway. But it's not. Right? When the Apostle Paul, or whomever, sat down to write this letter under the inspiration of the Spirit, he didn't lick the quill, put pen to paper, and Hebrews chapter 1, colon, verse 1, right, and begin. Didn't happen. Right? There's no chapter 1, verse 1. We don't have the original. Right? Can't go back and see the paper that Paul wrote on and say, that's exactly how Paul wrote it. Right? But we're certain that at some point later, we started adding chapter and verse. Why? Well, it makes it easier. Can you imagine? You see how thick a Bible is? Right? If I'm like, get about two-thirds of the way back for me, and we're going to try to find where Paul wrote. It's great. We have a reference. We agree on it. We're going to use Hebrews 11:1 and in everybody's King James Bible. Right? It's going to be the same thing. And in all the other translations as well, it's going to be similar. Right? We can go there and talk about it. But it creates this idea that this is the beginning of something. It's a division. Right? It's better than arbitrary, because as you read through Scripture, you can see that, most of the chapters and verses fall at fairly logical places. And certainly it does here. But that word "now" is not just a throwaway. Paul writes it, he says, "now, at this point in time." Don't lose the words that are on the page, because they signal something. Well, what does it signal? Well, here's where that arbitrary chapter verse thing throws us. Turn back. Go back to the previous chapter, which is chapter 10. Okay, beginning of chapter 10, for the law. Now look, I could do this all night. Because we see the word "for," and that means that because of something previous, but don't back up to chapter 9. If it happens to be on the same page, great. Just don't. Right? Stay with me. Okay? For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, we can get from this that Paul is talking about another time. Right? For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year, continually, make the comers thereunto perfect. Past tense, at that point, under the law, what law? The law given by God to Moses, to God's people, in Mount Sinai, as they wandered in the wilderness before they crossed the River Jordan and inhabited the land that we now call Israel and that they called Israel, and it was at that time the promised land for them. Okay? At that point, right, they come in, they possess, they build, they do things. They begin to do the law that God required. What law? Ceremonial law. At that time, they did the law. Why? Well, they had to, right? It's the law. You follow the law. We're supposed to follow the law. Sometimes we don't follow the law. We speed, right? We cut corners. We do things. That's not a big deal, right? It's a violation of the law. But why should you follow the law? Well, the law is the law. Is it inconvenient at times? Yes. I don't want to drive 55 miles an hour. I got places to be, people. And I want to drive 75. But we stick to the speed limit, or whatever we think the state trooper is going to let us get away with, right? Why? Orderly society, right? We're moving in the same direction, roughly the same speed's better for us, right? This isn't a treatise on law, just that's the general idea, right? You follow the law because that's the law, and it orders society. They followed the law because that was the order that God had given to their society. And it bled through not only how they conducted themselves civilly, but also it was their religion. Right? Their law was their religion. And when they did those things, they had an assurance that they had fulfilled what God asked them to do. And God said, when you do the law, right, then I'll do what I've agreed to do. What was that? Continue to bless His people. Right? This annual sacrifice, which is really what Paul is talking about, he says, look, that big sacrifice, when the priest goes in by himself, bells on the hem of his garment, right? Got a little rope to pull him out. In case he messed up, he dies, we pull him back out. He goes in, he makes the sacrifice, and God said what? When the priest makes the sacrifice, when he goes in, I'll meet him there, right? My presence will fill the temple, and you will have done the yearly sacrifice, and I will be pleased with my people for one more year, because those sins are now in the past. Right? I will treat them as if they're in the past. Right? Temporally, here in time. That was the law they were under when? That time. Okay? The rest of this chapter, Paul is talking about, but look, that never did anything because they had to keep doing it. And even if they were satisfied in their mind that they had done what was required under the letter of the law, there was still something in their heart that said, I am not satisfied because I still have a pricking in my conscience that says, I am a violator of the law. Paul says that that was good enough to get rid of that guilt that we had over our sin. Right? Because those people were just like us, no difference. If that sacrifice was good enough, then why did we still feel guilty? Why wasn't it satisfying to us? Right? God's wrath was satisfied naturally towards His people. My protection will be over you for another year. Get a whole other year to sin, and then we'll do it again. But still, there's guilt in the heart of the people of God. Why? Knew it wasn't enough. Didn't fully pay for the sin that was done. They understood that, right? Maybe not intellectually, but somewhere within them they understood. Now, we continue down. We get down to the end of the chapter, right? And we see these things. Verse 36, and now we're just being arbitrary, but we jump in and it says, "For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. So Paul is addressing now, well, we're New Testament now, right? The assertion is that Jesus is that actual sacrifice. Those things were the shadow, not the thing itself. Jesus was the thing itself. He has made the sacrifice. He is the sacrifice. And that sacrifice should absolve the guilt. Why? Because it wiped away eternity worth of sin. Not the last year. All of the sin for all of God's people for all time, it is gone. That cleanses the conscience, right? Because now we know there is nothing that stands between us and God, right? That's been removed. Now, do we still struggle with conscience? We certainly do, right? But it's different now. Right? It's different now. For yet a little while, and he that shall come will come and will not tarry. Now, there we go, right? Now. What's different now? Not then. Now, the just shall live by faith. Those who are justified, declared to be in alignment with the law. Right? Here's another word, right? Vocabulary. What is justification? Who uses Microsoft Word? Right? Those little things at the top where all the words move to the left, or they move to the middle, they move to the right, or they spread out. That's justification. What is it? It is aligning with a rule. Okay? There's a rule, and you're telling the computer, according to this rule, I want all the words on the left in this place. Here, I want the word centered according to the rule. You know what the thing is at the top? Right? It's a ruler. It's measuring. You got about 8.5 inches on American paper going across, 11 up and down. Right? If you're in Louisiana, in law, we still use the long paper. Don't ask me why. All it does is jam our printers and make us have to read more. Right? You think about you're in school. Great, I only have to write a 3-page paper. Wonderful. Louisiana, that's like a whole other page, right? You know, 3 more inches each page is almost another full page. Oh my goodness, it's terrible, right? But the ruler is there, and you align things, or you justify it. There's an established rule, and you set things in accordance with that rule. Christ on the cross set us in alignment with the law of God, eternally speaking, right? The then sacrifices, those were now, right? Those were at that time. Not now, now, right? Then now. Does that make sense? Goodness, I messed that up, right? But you're with me, right? They were a temporal, a timely sacrifice. They had an effect then, but the effect was done as soon as it was done, right? We accomplished it. Now it's over. Now we're starting over a new year, new sin, no sacrifice yet. Jesus' sacrifice, though, eternal, right? Eternal. Okay. Now, the just shall live by faith. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Right? You get it? Context matters. Right? Context matters. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for. Okay? It's the evidence of things not seen. I'm going to tell you tonight that faith is a real thing. It exists. It has a presence. It is something that we can know. But what in the world is it? Well, I hope by the end of tonight, and if it takes until tomorrow, we'll finish it up tomorrow. I hope you'll go with me down this path that faith is the sixth sense by which we experience the spiritual. Okay? It is in addition to the other five senses, right? How do we know what is, naturally speaking? If you watch children, right? That is the human existence at its most basic level, right? They're sinners like the rest of us, but the way that they interact with the world, no frame of reference, right? No long-term memory, not a lot of experience to draw from. So what do, right? You've got little rubber things, and they make them now that look like little creatures, and you put them on the end of your coffee table and your dining table and every sharp object because children don't know that they exist from here up, right? Like 3 inches of forehead and not a lot of hair, kind of like me and some others, so I won't name, right? But it doesn't exist above that. And so they run into everything. Why? I don't have a head above my eyes. Yes, you do. You haven't learned it yet. How are you going to learn it? You are going to feel some things. Right? You're going to use one of those senses. You're going to feel it. Right? you stop letting things lay around on the floor. You know, you got a dog and they've got toys and they're on the floor, but you get a baby who's starting to crawl. What do? Those toys do not stay on the floor. Dog is sad, right? But mama's happy because baby's not putting nasty dog toys in their mouth, right? Not putting nasty dog toys in their mouth, right? They're experiencing the world. What are they doing? They're tasting things, right? They're tasting things. Put their mouth on everything, okay? We hear things, right? We see things. We've got our senses, and we use those, and we explore the world, and we know what something is based on those senses here in time. You ever at night try to go through the house, and you don't want to turn the lights on, and you don't want to wake somebody up, and really you probably just should have turned the light on because you're going to wake them up, because you're going to walk into something, right? Because furniture moves on its own in the middle of the night. Lived in this house for 20 years, coffee table is not where it's supposed to be. Why is it in the middle of the hallway now, right? You turn the light on, and it's moved so fast, you can't see it, but it's jumped straight back into the living room. But you ran into it and knocked a vase off or something, and that catastrophe, right? And everybody's awake, okay? We experience the world through that. We know where things are based on the feel. You can kind of feel your way around, you know? Feel for the light switch. You can hear things. Tell which way something's coming, right? Driving, hear the sirens going. You start listening and you can tell, right? You can tell, is it in front of me, behind me? Do I need to get over? Do I need to just be watching for it? What do I do? Right? You taste stuff. I'll tell you. Now, look, I know that I've been told by those of you who are getting older, and this is just generally speaking among churches, not necessarily anybody here, right? No old people here. But getting old is not for the faint of heart, right? Because sometimes things, you're not as sure as you were about things you used to be. And I remember walking in. We lived with my dad's parents for a while. My grandparents were arguing. They had the same fancy food storage that you've probably got. It's the Country Crock collection. That's the real nice brown Tupperware. They got this Country Crock, and it's no longer butter. And they're arguing, you know. Well, I think this is mashed potatoes. No, it's not mashed potatoes. That's cauliflower. Right? It's cauliflower. They cooked cauliflower the other day. And I walked in, and I looked at it, and I said, those are green beans, and they're not good anymore. We're throwing them out, right? And, of course, my grandmother, because they grew up during the Depression, started scraping it off, and it's still good underneath, and we're going to eat it. No, we're not. You know, we got green beans. Right? Right? But what can happen is, you know, we use those senses to tell, and your taste is a great, great way to tell. You know, if they had bitten into that, they would have known neither cauliflower nor mashed potatoes, I hope, you know, unless it tasted like buttermilk, that's possible. Right? But your taste can tell you that's poisonous, right? That's not good. I need to spit it out. That milk is bad, right? I don't need that. Taste, right? We experience it. And it's valuable for us. But now look, how do we experience spiritual things? Well, didn't Jesus say in Matthew and Mark, he's talking to the people, and he says, he who hath ear, let him hear, right? Well, does that mean that it's the natural hearing? He's not talking about that, right? You go to any of those passages, usually parallel accounts, right? But Jesus is talking, and he's got all kinds of people there. And he's speaking, and everybody hears the words.
Right.
It's not where he's healing the deaf. Right? We got this group of people here, and they're listening, and they comprehend the speech. These people here, they comprehend the speech. But Jesus says, do you get what I'm saying? Right? You ever known somebody who they follow stuff up when they're trying to get across a point of you and say, like, you hear me? Right? Do you hear me? Not, you got the sound waves, but I mean, do you understand what I'm talking about? Right? Did you hear me? That's what Jesus is saying. Did you understand what I'm really saying? And I'm going to tell you, a lot of the people did. There were a few people scratching their head. Right? I have no idea what this man's talking about. I don't know. Why? Why? Ears weren't broken. Eyes were working, right? Taste wasn't really involved, but you know, no evidence that that was bad. It wasn't those senses. What was it? They were lacking something spiritual, no ability to hear it, right? No ability to hear it, okay? Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. What is that, right? Faith is our proof of the spiritual things of God in the same way now, right? Now, that it was then through the law service. How do I know that there's a God in heaven? Well, he gave us this law, specifically these rituals to do, and when we do them, God said, I'll do this, and He does that, therefore I know God. What is it? Evidence. Right? It was evidence. But it was through those senses. It wasn't spiritual. Right? We saw the crop harvest. Right? We got a harvest. We saw that our enemies didn't attack, or that we prevailed in battle. We saw the natural blessings of the Lord. Physical safety, food, right? Our children were blessed. Our flocks, as they reproduced, we didn't have deformities and we didn't have problems with them. Right? Things were good. Right? Things were good. And that's how we knew God was there. Well, we don't have that anymore, do we? Never in my life have I been in an old Baptist church and seen somebody bring livestock in. I have seen livestock at a primitive Baptist church, right? But never with the purpose we're going to offer the sacrifice. We don't have that, right? The ritual's gone. Now, again, as an aside, right? The moral code of God hasn't changed. You know, the proper behavior, how we're to conduct ourselves, has not changed. What's changed are the rituals, right? The rituals. And I can even make an argument that's really not that different now than it was then. We'll leave that for another time. We'll see if we get to it. Now we have faith in the place of that ritual worship. Okay, it's different now. That's what we've got. We've got this faith, and it is how we experience these things. Okay? 2 Corinthians 5. Right? 2 Corinthians 5. Not 1 Corinthians 5. Right? Not going to preach on that tonight. Don't know if we'll get to it at some point. Right? 2 Corinthians 5. It's funny, but because you've mentioned some verses and everybody knows what they mean, right? You say John 3:16, we all start rattling it off in our head, right? Romans 8:28, we can hit the good ones, you know. Go to Philippians, a lot of verses there. James, love it. You know, it's great. You say 1 Corinthians chapter 5, and people, oh no, we're going to talk about that. No, right? 2 Corinthians 5. But you start thinking about that stuff, right? 2 Corinthians 5, for we know, right? Well, there's another four, we're not going to get into it. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Well, what in the world are we talking about there? Really doesn't matter, right? For this context. Now, is he talking about this physical body? I think so. Is he also talking about the other things that we have that the body interacts with, the creature comfort? Yeah, probably, right? Because he talks about a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Sounds kind of like it's there for us already. Whatever it may be, this body or the space that it inhabits, God's made preparation for that and it's there, right? And Paul says, we know, we're aware, we're cognizant of the fact that if the earthly things dissolve, what does dissolve mean, right? To go away, right? To lose its form. Right? It's not recognizable. What happens when you put sugar, right? What happens when you put sugar in cold tea? Nothing, right? No dissolving, right? No dissolution. Stays the same. It's there at the bottom. And if you want sweet tea, you just got to drink it fast and get to the bottom. Maybe swirl it around a little bit, right? Put it in hot tea, different story. What happens, right? What happens? It changes. It dissolves, right? Make it some pasta, boil some water, throw some salt in it, right? It dissolves. It goes away, okay? It's still there. It's in another form. We don't recognize it. What happens to the body when we die? Dissolves, right? It decays. It goes back to the dust, right? It's no longer recognizable in that form. Given enough time, don't recognize the body anymore. It's dissolved. What happens to everything else? You know, you don't keep it up, it dissolves. You don't live in, isn't it amazing? You don't live in a house and the house goes away? What happens, right? Living in a house is maintenance of the house. I don't know. I can't explain that one. Maybe somebody who's a builder can. But it'll dissolve and start to deteriorate and crumble, and you give it enough time, you don't know it was there, right? Okay. So whatever it is, once it's dissolved, wonderful, but we know this, the earthly things may be dissolved. We have something in heaven prepared by God that won't dissolve. It's not going away. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. If so be that being clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Now he that hath wrought us for the selfsame thing is God, who also hath given unto us the earnest of the Spirit. Therefore, we are always confident, knowing that, whilst we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. Wonderful verses. And all of that is basically what I just said, right? We know we've got promises of God. They're there for us. They're prepared by Christ. They are delivered to us by earnest of the Spirit. That means we get a little bit of it now through the Spirit. We experience it. Did you catch that? How do we get it? Through the Spirit, right? You're not getting it from seeing me and hearing the words. You're getting it. If you're getting this, if you're hearing it, because the Spirit is blessing you to hear it. Okay? I can make a compelling argument for you. Cross the T's, dot the I's, all of that mess. But it doesn't do any good if there's no Spirit. It's just gibberish, and you don't care. If the Spirit's not there, you don't care about this. But if you get it, it's through the Spirit. Okay? If you're saying, well, you know what? I'm ready because, you know what? This body is broken down. I'm ready for the new body. You know? Just naturally speaking, I'm tired. Or if you're like me and you don't, existence from the head up is kind of sparse, right? You're thinking, man, I hope I get a full head of hair, right? Some days I think I'd be happy if I get some more hair. I'd be all right with that. Heaven would be a good place, full head of hair, right? Be good. I'd also like to be a little taller. Change a couple of other things, a little more chin, a little less nose, right? I mean, we can go through that. But really, what we're talking about is but if we have a desire beyond just what we would rather look like or how we'd rather feel, we say, but spiritually I want to be there. Now we understand that Spirit is speaking to us, and so we're getting, okay? Therefore, we are always confident, knowing that whilst we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, we're looking to something else, colon, which by the way is basically equal to. So Paul says this, colon, why are we confident, right, knowing all these things? For we walk by faith, not by sight. Now is that natural walking? No. Right? That's spiritually. Right? Just like hearing, seeing, taste and see that the Lord is good. Right? And that doesn't mean we've got to wait for communion and hope the bread is good. Right? Because I mean, honestly, the way we do communion, right, it's not for the savory flavor. I've had communion bread that I preferred over others, but I've never had any where I thought, got to get home and whip up a batch of that, right? And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but I mean the purpose of that meal when we gather together is not the taste and the texture so much as it is what it represents, right? Taste and see that the Lord is good, right? What we're talking about is just an experience. You know, we appreciate eating. And so we know that the blessings of the Lord are sweet, they're wonderful, right? They're all of those things. And so we recognize that. We walk spiritually by faith, not by sight. Okay? We don't see it with the eyes. We don't experience it with the senses. It is something that we've got within us, this faith. And when do we have it? Now. Did they have it then? Yes. Right, but what happens when you got so many of the natural things in front of you and that's your focus is, you start thinking about that. You don't think about the spiritual, right? I'm going to tell you this, and this is what I mean when I say I hope that this permeates the entire meeting is, we have to realize that the Old Testament was natural first, then spiritual, right? Natural first. How do we know, Old Testament, that there is a law? Well, this guy Moses wandered up Mount Sinai, and I saw some things, right? Lightning, fire, shaking, scary place, don't like it. This is also in the book of Hebrews, by the way, right? Paul says this, we didn't like it. Mountain that was burned with fire, don't go near it, right? You'll die if you touch it. Put out the rail that said, you know, danger beyond this point, right? Moses comes down, and he's got two tablets of stone, right? Comes down. How do we know this is the law of God? He's got two tablets of stone. It must be the law of God, right? Right. There's our proof. And we see all these other signs, and now we've got this law and all the other wonders and signs that Moses did. There's the testimony. There's what is testimony, right? Spoken evidence, isn't it? Those of you who don't know, I'm an attorney, right? So I deal with this, right? Right? Testimony is spoken evidence. Okay? All these things are a testimony, or they're visible evidence, right? They're tangible things, they're physical objects. That proves God's law. And then we start doing those things and the things that we heard that would happen if we did those things that Moses said to do, then those things that God said He would do happen, and therefore we know what God did His thing, and therefore it's true, and therefore there is God, and we are Israel, and there you go. Right? What other proof do you need? We see it. But then we lose this whole idea of spirituality. Why? Because we got the tangible stuff. New Testament. Right? Contrast. Now. We ain't got that stuff. Right? We may have seen depictions of those tablets of stone, ain't got them. Right? Y'all ever seen the Ark of the Covenant? Not watching Indiana Jones. I'm talking about the actual one. No. Right? And if you've seen that movie, and some of y'all are not, and you know what happens if you see it, right? So I don't want to see it. Right? Leave it alone. If it still exists wherever it is, I don't want to see it. Okay? Bad stuff. Aaron's rod that budded was in there. Right? No. Bowl of manna was in there. No. I ain't got it. Now, we get snow occasionally. Y'all have had snow here, right, before. Rarely, but you get it. Not good when you do, because it's gotten cold, bad for the oranges, makes people cranky, right? People who are not originally from here moved here to get away from that mess. All, those of you who were born and raised here didn't move up there, you don't want to deal with that mess, right? So snow's not a great thing. Fun for a day. Fluffy white stuff falling from heaven, that ain't manna. You can eat as much of that as you want. You probably won't be real thirsty, right? But you're not going to be less hungry because you ate a bunch of snow. I mean, we've never seen manna, bread from heaven. Ain't got it. Okay? We've not seen the sacrifices. We've never seen the glory of God filling the temple. You can't, by the way, because the temple in that form is not even there. Right? It can't happen. Ain't got none of these things. We don't have those physical things to see and to rely on. How do we know that God is? Faith. Right? It's another way of perceiving. And in the New Testament, what do? Without the distractions of the natural, right? Goofy-looking preacher waving his arms notwithstanding, right? The things that we actually see are not the things that we visibly view. It's the things that we feel inside of us, right? And that is the Spirit of God moving in us. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We've got confidence. We know things. We believe in the things that God has done. We believe in the blessings of the Spirit. We look forward to being in heaven with Him. Why? Through faith, not by sight. And none of this stuff makes any kind of sense through the five senses, does it? You know? I mean, there's that idea that, you know, you've never seen it, never tasted it, never heard it, never felt it, never smelt it. Didn't happen. Right? Any of y'all ever been, and I'm going to pick a random country, Malaysia. You ever been there? Right? No. Okay. You ever met somebody from there? No. Right? And I mean, use your brain. Some of you may have, and fine, ruin my example. Pick a random country. None of y'all globetrotters have been there to every single one. Pick the one you haven't been to. Right? I could say Montana. You know, I've driven through there. I can tell you that I believe it is because I've been there and I've seen the mountains in a snowstorm, by the way, not manna from heaven. You ever been to Malaysia? No. You ever seen somebody from Malaysia? No. You got this idea that Malaysia's out there because people have talked about it, but you haven't seen it. Do you really know Malaysia exists? Right? By the way, people who think that the earth is flat, not round, that's one of the arguments, you know? Like, I've never been all the way around the globe. I don't know. Is it really round? Right? It can't be. Okay? But that's not the proof of spiritual things, right? Because those things are, by their nature, not seen. They've got to be revealed, right? Nobody knew who Jesus was until He showed up. It was a revelation of the Son of God, and people who were looking and with a spiritual eye could say, that's Him, right? But it was a manifestation. Spiritual things are manifest to us. They are shown to us. But in the New Testament, it's through faith, spiritual, and then we interpret the natural from that. Right? The Old Testament, you define the spiritual by what you see naturally and your experience with it. Now we define the world, our interactions with one another, how we ought to behave ourselves, right? The things that we ought to do, the things that we should believe about the natural world. We reason in this realm based on what we know spiritually. It's turned on its head, right? Jesus flipped everything inside out, didn't He? Yeah, that's fair. It's the same, just inverted. Right? Just inverted. Okay? So now we've got this idea, we've got this faith, and it's what we use, right? Romans chapter 3. Yeah, getting the good stuff, right? Hebrews, Romans, 2 Corinthians, right? All the good Paul letters. Right? Getting into them. Romans chapter 3. What advantage then hath the Jew? Right? Well, now, you know, we're at this time where there's still a lot of Jewish people. And a lot of them are torn. Do I believe the things that these apostles are teaching? You know, I heard Jesus, or I know somebody who heard Jesus. They saw him. I'm familiar with these events. I was an eyewitness, or I've got the experience of somebody firsthand who saw it. And what do? I'm torn, right? And where do we go with this? Right? Where do we go? The entire book of Galatians is written to a group of people in a region, right? They're in a region of churches, kind of like an association, if you will. A lot of them are Jewish. And they're trying to decide, well, what do? You know, we've learned Christ and we're not to do those Jewish things anymore. But then these guys came up from Jerusalem. They taught us this stuff. What do? Circumcision? I don't know. Right? They're also struggling with this in Jerusalem, by the way. Go read Acts chapter 23, 24, 25, somewhere there. Paul goes down. Peter says, we got to talk about this, right? James, we got to talk about this. Right? What do we do with circumcision now? I don't know. We got to figure this out. Okay? It's a struggle. Right? What advantage then have the Jew? Because Paul is saying we're moving beyond this. The other apostles are saying we're moving beyond the formal outward ritual of that religion. We're not giving up on God. Right? We're not giving up on those things. We're not giving up on the truths of the Old Testament. We're just realizing there's something better, and it doesn't involve having to be in Jerusalem. Doesn't involve sacrifices. And it involves a pure worship of God with the revelation of the Messiah who came. That is the person of Jesus, the Christ, right? Christ is Greek for Messiah, right? Jesus is the guy's name, which is also Joshua, which means Savior, right? He is the Savior, Son of God. That's who Jesus Christ is, okay? Now we got this guy. We know there's something different. What advantage then hath the Jew? Who cares anymore, right? Paul's saying that, right? What is it? Everybody's saying, well, why would it even matter if we're Jewish? Or what profit is there of circumcision? Much every way. Chiefly because unto them were committed the oracles of God, right? Well, what is it about that identity that was still good? Well, Paul says that they had the oracles of God. You were the recipients and the people who participated in, through your forefathers, right? Abraham and all these faithful, Pharisees talking to Jesus, right? We have Abraham for our father. Whose father is yours, right? Whose son are you? We have Abraham. Right? Father of the faithful. Go back and keep reading in Hebrews chapter 11. Honor roll of faith, right? We just didn't get there. Okay? So what does all this mean? Well, that was wonderful. What a great heritage. You grew up in the church, right? Here in the Primitive Baptist Church. Man, that's a great heritage, isn't it? There were a lot of things that you knew because you heard them growing up. May not have fully understood them growing up, but you had heard it so many times. Then when it came time to learn, right, and really understand, yeah, I heard faith all the time growing up, didn't know what it was. Right? It's just a great thing to have, and we got to have it, we got to use it. And James says faith without works is dead, and that sounds great and all, or maybe not, but you know, whatever. Yeah, I know the word. But then you start knowing what it means, right? Well, that's an advantage over somebody who comes in never having heard the words or having a completely different understanding and needing to unlearn and re-understand some things, right? Or pick up the vocabulary from the get-go. Had a friend of mine grew up in another group of Christian people, right? Good guy, I love him. Came to see me preach at a church in Mississippi once because he happened to be passing through. Sat by my mom, who also happened to be there, right? Weirdest thing in the world. My college friend, my mom sitting together on the pew at church. I'm preaching. Out-of-body experience almost, except I was in the body, right? Just weird. But they're sitting there and I kept noticing, you know, because I look out and I see who's sleeping, who's not, right? He's leaning over and he's asking mom questions. She's got a pad of paper and she's writing little notes, passing it back to him. Well, y'all quit writing love letters to one another, whatever you're doing, okay? He was asking questions. Why? Well, there were things that I was talking about, we're familiar with, biblical terms, just his faith tradition. They weren't as scripture focused, and he really wasn't as experienced with those things. He didn't know. He needed to learn it, right? Get in the loop. Well, what advantage was it here? Well, you've got all this wonderful tradition. You know the Old Testament's true. All you got to figure out is this Jesus is the fulfillment of that. Isn't that great? Now what do? Right? It's an advantage. Great. But then notice this. He says, for what if some, who? The Jews. What if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faith of God without effect? A couple of thoughts here. First, faith and belief are not the same thing. Okay? You got to have faith. You got to believe. Yeah, it's not the same thing, right? And now you're singing a popular song from the 80s in your head. We've gone all the way from Little Orphan Annie to like 80s pop music. I promise we won't get into like, you know, early 2000s hip hop at any point. I don't know enough of it to get there, and I'm not sure I can make it fit scriptural anyway. Maybe the end of the pop culture references, I don't know. Right? But now you're singing it. Okay? Back to the text, though. Right? You do have to have faith. Right? To what? Experience spiritual things. Why? That's the sense, right, through which we interact. Okay? So you got to have it. But it's not synonymous with belief. Right? Belief is you intellectualizing what you know through that sense. Right? You hear things as a child, taste things as a child, see, touch, smell as a child. You've had the experience. You know something, but you haven't ordered it and made sense of it so that it is useful for you as a child, right? When I hear the sound of the garage door going up, I hear the sound and it startles me. But until I grow a little bit, I don't associate that with mom or dad coming home, right? You hear the ice cream truck, right? And you, okay, that's a melody, right? Not until you get older, if your parents will even let you near the blinds, right? They don't duct tape you to the wall when it comes through. Right? And then you begin to associate delicious treats in that van, right? Okay? But when you hear it, you don't know about it. You got to do something with it and figure it out. That's what belief is, right? Belief is making the connection between what we have sensed through faith and then understanding and comprehending it so that it is useful that we may direct the other senses according to it. Right? That we can have our body under subjection according to the faith that's within us. The things we know spiritually that tell us what we do with those other senses. Right? Okay. Now, also within that, right, is this idea that God has faith. And that begins to make sense when you realize this is more than just like believing in something we don't actually see, hear, experience with the other five senses. Yeah, faith is an attribute of God, right? Faith is an attribute of God because it is not this unreasoned, based on nothing, belief in these things that we don't experience with the five senses. Yeah, I suppose there's a God. I can't say that there's not, so there must be. Woo! Ringing endorsement from the agnostic section, right? That's great. Love that spirit, right? No. This is based on something. It's faith, right? God has delivered to us in the new birth this attribute along with the other attributes that we have, right? But part of what we get when we become spiritually alive again through the work of the Holy Spirit, right, is we get faith. Have you thought about that? We are dead in our sins until we are quickened, that is made alive by the Lord. Well, what happens then? That there is something within you that is now capable of experiencing things in a way it hadn't before. Is it natural? No. You got a natural body. You got the spirit of man, right? Well, why do you need the spirit of God and the soul within you to be awakened into new life to experience the natural world? Nah. You're good on that, right? Got all the natural you need before the Lord touches you. But when He does His work, you then experience spiritual things. How? You've now got faith. How did you get it? God gave it to you out of Himself. He has faith. That's how He does the spiritual things. It is those spiritual stuff things that God does. That's faith. And we experience it by the faith that He's given us. Right? It's the installation of something that allows us to deal with, comprehend, experience the spiritual world. We couple that with belief to make it functional for us. Not just an experience, but useful. And we learn from it, and we do better. But then what happens if we see some that don't believe? If they don't believe, does that make the faith of God without effect? No. Right? God forbid, yea, let God be true, but every man a liar. Right? So it's an attribute of God. All right? Skip forward just a little. Romans chapter 9, right? Verse 30. Romans chapter 9, verse 30. What shall we say then? My goodness, we got to back up again. We're not going to. Just go read it, right? I hate not getting the context. Go read it, right? But there's a response that's required, right? Based on something. Go find out what. What shall we say then? That the Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith. Man, that's a mess. Let's read more and then we'll untangle it. Romans 31, but Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, have not attained to the law of righteousness. Still a hot mess. Wherefore? Why? Because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law, for they stumbled at that stumbling stone. As it is written, behold, I lay in Sion a stumbling stone and a rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on Him shall not be ashamed. All right. We got somewhere that sounds like it's talking about Jesus. Great. Let's start there, right? Okay. Jesus. Okay. Him, right? And believing. And all this stuff. We get it now, New Testament. All right, Jesus is the one we believe in. Believe what? That He's the Messiah. Based on what? The proof of the Old Testament, and He mashed and fulfilled the prophecies, death on the cross, resurrection, ascension into heaven. All right. And then we understand now, because of Jesus' teaching and the teaching of the apostles, and He gave us His Spirit, whereby we know that is the Christ. We identify Him by His Spirit. How do we interact with the Spirit? Faith. Is it all coming together? We know it's Jesus. But there are some, right, who don't understand because they stumbled on that stumbling stone, the same one, Jesus, stumbled. Right? Didn't get it. Can't wrap my mind around this Jesus guy and what he meant. Okay? Fine. So what happened because of that? Well, they followed after the law, right? Israel, right? The Jewish people, right? God's people in the Old Testament. They followed after the law of righteousness. Old Testament law was a law of righteousness. Right? It was a good law. It was a holy law. It was perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. What was wrong with it was us. Right? The law itself wasn't broken. Israel followed the law, but it didn't attain to the law of righteousness. It didn't get there. They followed it, but they didn't get there. Why? You can't do it through the blood of bulls and goats. Go back to Hebrews, right? Hebrews 8, 9, 10, 11, all through there, right? Can't do it through that. That's why they didn't get there. Why? No belief in Jesus Christ. That means they didn't attain. Does that mean that they weren't holy? No. It means that they didn't reach a level of understanding, that they still had that guilt of sin. Why? Because all they could see was the sacrifice was made, but that doesn't add up to the sin I've committed, and I know that in my heart. That's not enough. I'm unsatisfied in my soul. That is cured by Jesus being the sacrifice, but I stumble over that because He was born in a backwater town. Right? He's supposed to be the king, right? It's the throne of David. Where was He born? In a manger, right? In a barn, in a stall with the animals. Who's His mama? She's not from the royal line, oh, we think, right? And she's not there. She's not actually like there in the temple of Bethlehem. Dad's a carpenter. He's nobody special, but he was, right? But that didn't make sense. He wasn't educated, right? Paul's got the Harvard degree, studied at the feet of Gamaliel, school of Tyrannus, right? I mean, that guy had the education, see what good it did him. Jesus got nothing, right? Backwater town, son of a carpenter. He didn't look good. You remember they picked the first king in the Old Testament? Line everybody up, and what do? Hey, pass me over, right? 5'10", 165 pounds, with my big shoes on, right? No one wants me. You're not going to put me forward in battle, right? Fight goes down. You're not looking to hide behind me. You know they're going to see you behind me. I'm not calling you big. I'm saying I ain't. And they're going to get to you through me. You know? You want a big guy. Hey, there's Saul, right? Head and shoulders above everybody. Looks good. He'll look good in the crown. Sit him on the throne. There he is. God says, you know what you're going to get. Like, well, that's what we want. Bring it on, right? They got him. They got him. That's what they were looking for. God said He's coming from the throne of David. Look for the one you're not expecting, the youngest son, right? Not even old. He's not even shaving. And this is your king, not Saul. That's your king. Hey, why wouldn't it be Jesus from nowhere? Didn't look good, right? Not somebody you'd expect. Should have been, but they stumble over it. Why? They wanted Saul again, not David. Israel didn't get there. They didn't attain it. They didn't reach it. Why? All right, but verse 30, right, we're backing up. The Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, what does that mean? That they were barbaric? No, it means they didn't follow that law. And it says, but wait a minute, they've attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith. A spiritual attainment. They understood something spiritually where the Jews didn't. Why? Jews following the law, that can't be right. This isn't the guy. Gentiles, that's got to be him. Look, I don't have as much experience with this as you do, but I'm telling you, that looks like it matches to me. I'm satisfied. They attained, right? Not that they were holier eternally than the Jewish people, but they experience now with their senses something better. Galatians chapter 3. Verse 1, told you, kind of get our way around. Here we go. Galatians 3, verse 1. O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that ye should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you? This only would I learn of you, receive ye the Spirit, by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Are ye so foolish, having begun in the Spirit, are ye now made perfect by the flesh? Right? You see it? Now look, I'm telling you, this is Paul writing to a group of churches that have been eaten up with a return to the ritual of the law in the place of actual study and understanding and appreciation of what they have now in Jesus Christ. They're not viewing it through an eye of faith. They're going back to that law service. Do we circumcise? Do we not? Do we have to go to Jerusalem? Do we sacrifice? Do we keep the holy days? Do we keep the feast? What do we have to do? Can I eat this? Can I not eat this? Right? I don't know. What do we do now? You're going back to that. Who bewitched you? Did you get to your understanding? You had an understanding of Christ. Did you get there by the works of the law? No. Paul says, go back and look at Jesus' interaction with the Pharisees. They knew the law. They didn't get there. Paul says, look, I knew the law. I knew the law. And then on the Damascus Road, I understood the law. Why? Because his faith was coupled with his experience, right? Paul had a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. When that came together because he saw Jesus Christ, right? When that came together, he understood it. And he said, it is not that Old Testament law by which I have received blessing of God and I understand what he has done. He says, it is by the work of Jesus Christ. Paul says, you're going back to where I came from. Don't go there. Don't go there. Read this entire chapter. It's wonderful. It talks about faith in that context. Look at it, right? Romans chapter 12, verse 1. I beseech you. Paul says, I'm asking you, I'm imploring you, almost begging, but not quite, right? Not quite hands and knees, but he's earnest about this. I beseech you, therefore, go back and read what the therefore is. Beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice. Wait, what have we been? We started off, right? Not the Old Testament sacrifice. Why? Don't need it. What do we do? New Testament sacrifice. Present your body. It doesn't go away. You serve the Lord. You're not laying it down in the sense that you are ceasing to exist as payment for your sins, but instead you are living a life in accordance with the moral code of conduct that he's already set before, that Jesus himself endorsed when he came and said, that's still good, right? Adultery is still bad. Murder is still bad. Stealing is still bad. Loving your neighbor is still good. Didn't change, right? But you don't have to do the works of the law anymore after the death, burial, and resurrection. He says, now you present yourself not a dead sacrifice, but as Christ is risen and lives, you are a living sacrifice to him. Holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. The renewing how? Not thinking is the natural man, right? New. It's new again. It's recycled. How? Spiritual now. Why? You've got faith. It's inverted. Same stuff, but spiritual first, not natural. Transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. You've got faith. He gave it to you. He says, use it. And I'm going to leave you with this thought to chew on tonight. I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. Now, I know that pride is a bad thing, but let me ask you this. How much honor is there to God in saying, I am so wretched, I have no gift to offer in service? You have been given faith, and you have been given spiritual gifts. And so to say, right, to say that I have no gift is to throw in God's face the gift that He has given you, including faith, the ability to understand spiritual things. Look, Paul said, I labored more abundantly than they all. I did the work. I got on the boat and I went and I preached and I gave my body in service. Yet not I. Right? Yet not I. He said it was God in me that did it. But he said, but yeah, I had to do the work. And there's no shame in that. Right? And so we don't think of ourselves more highly than we ought to. But do you notice that there is a certain level at which we ought to think of ourselves, and that is appropriately as God has blessed us? And how do we do that? Through faith. Not because you're good looking or not good looking. Good voice, not a good voice. Right? Intelligent, not intelligent, which is a silly thing anyway. We can get into that some other time. Right? Whatever it is you say, I'm not this or I am this, put it at the right level. And none of those natural things matter. It's spiritual. God has given you a spirit. He has given you faith. You can believe and understand and arrange those things and make it useful to be a living sacrifice. And to say, I can't, and to put ourselves down, is to throw back in God's face the gift that He has given us. And that is just as wrong as the sin of pride. We are to think of ourselves soberly, according as God has blessed us with the gift of faith. Thank you for your attention this evening.